Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and our spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour with engineer Mike Murphy and my good friend and Milford Township neighbor northeast of Ames on the Prairie Winds Prairie. Hi, Mike Metz.
Hello, Pat. How are you today?
It's a great day in the neighborhood, that's for sure. Rain in the forecast.
I was going to say, out there on the prairie, we've got lots of different kinds of butterflies. I've got plants are shutting down, especially the parsley, rosemary, and thyme. And there's one missing that I think the monarchs are suddenly being attracted to, at least west of us.
In the picture sage? I was down at the Keene Conservation Area. We're going to have a report about monarchs from Chris Atkins a little bit later in the show. And there is a full slate of Local Talk guests in the wings, so to speak, with information from our fair region of Iowa later in the hour for your enjoyment. The weather includes a rainstorm forecast this afternoon with a high of 81 and a low this evening around our normal 63 or so. Lots of sun this weekend with highs in the upper 80s and 90 on Sunday. A cool front is forecast Monday with highs in the lower 70s on Tuesday with additional showers. An autumn-like condition with lows in the 50s at night. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from our local newspaper.
The coronavirus and that football game at Jack Dry Stadium all made big news on the pages of the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday, when the Trib reported that 143 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County over the previous week. That brought the total number of virus cases in the county to 11,655 since the pandemic started. In the Ames School District, fewer than 17 cases of the virus were confirmed among students and staff members. The Ballard School District reported fewer than 21 cases among students and staff members. Gilbert reported 11 cases among students and staff in the district there. And at Iowa State University, 21 cases of the virus were reported. The Trib also reported that more than half of Story County residents had been vaccinated against the coronavirus. Nearly 61% over the age of 12 have been fully vaccinated, and 65% have received at least one dose. The Trib also reported that Iowa State University had lost more enrollment again this year. ISU's enrollment this fall is slightly less than 31,000 students, about 1,000 less than last fall. And last fall's enrollment was about 1,500 less than the year before. The biggest numerical enrollment losses since the coronavirus pandemic started have been in engineering, liberal arts and sciences, and human sciences. Students at ISU this fall represent every state in the union, as well as 112 countries. Iowa residents make up about 56% of the student body at ISU. Meanwhile, at the University of Iowa, its fall enrollment of slightly more than 31,000 students is down about 400 from last fall. The Trib also had word that the Ames School District would take a big step toward finding a permanent district superintendent this past Monday. That was when the school board would choose a search firm to help pick the permanent superintendent. Former Superintendent Jenny Reisner resigned in May, and interim Superintendent Paula Vinson is leading the district this year while a permanent successor is found. The goal is to have a new superintendent chosen by February. And the Trib also reported that Story County Emergency Management would test its alert system this past Monday afternoon by calling, texting, or emailing the 24,000 residents and businesses registered to receive notifications. The test was part of National Preparedness Month. Severe weather alerts are delivered to those who have signed up through Story County Iowa Alerts. Saturday's paper reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds was criticizing President Biden's announcement that federal agencies and businesses would be required to vaccinate their employees against the coronavirus. Reynolds has encouraged Iowans to get vaccinated against the virus, but has opposed mandating such vaccinations. She said the president was taking, in her words, dangerous and unprecedented steps to insert the federal government even further into our lives, while dismissing the ability of Iowans and Americans to make healthcare decisions for themselves. And the Trib had a long takeout, looking back on what happened on September 11, 2001, when terrorists killed nearly 3,000 people in the United States in coordinated attacks against the World Trade Center in New York and the Pentagon in Washington. They hijacked four commercial airplanes, which slammed into the Trade Center's twin towers, into the Pentagon, and onto a field in Pennsylvania. Sunday's paper reported that the Nevada Fire Department had commemorated the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. on Saturday. Firefighters put up a big American flag and pictures of the firefighters and police officers who died on that day 20 years ago. And as cars stopped at the intersection of the Lincoln Highway and 10th Street, the fire department's chaplain handed out flyers, encouraging people to pause and reflect on the losses that stemmed from those attacks, including the loss of about 3,000 people that day. There was also word that a captain in the Boone Fire Department had retired after 33 years of service. Kent Peterson had first worked as a mechanic before getting interested in firefighting as an adult. Over the decades, he's helped put out countless fires and responded to calls involving hazardous materials, vehicle accidents, and medical emergencies. He was promoted to captain 10 years ago, and that involved taking on more administrative and supervisory duties. The Trib also reported on the progressive history of the oldest church in Ames. It's now known as the United Church of Christ. Back in the 1860s when it was founded, it was the Congregational Church. And the Trib's website had word on that Iowa State University, University of Iowa football game on Saturday at Jack Trice Stadium. As you likely know, the U of I defeated ISU 27-17. It was the sixth straight time Iowa had defeated Iowa State. Tomorrow, the Cyclones will face an easier team, UNLV in Las Vegas. UNLV has lost both its games so far this season and is considered one of the worst teams in the Mountain West Conference. Tuesday's paper reported that Story County Medical Clinics have received a supply of the annual seasonal flu vaccine, and they're encouraging people to get their flu shots. Those clinics are at 640 South 19th Street in Nevada and 403 First Street in Maxwell. Everyone 6 months old or older should receive a flu shot each year. Flu activity often begins to increase in October, and the experts say it's safe to get vaccinated for both the coronavirus and the flu at the same time. In addition to the medical clinics, the Walgreens and CVS drugstores in Ames are offering flu shots to anyone ages 3 and older, and walk-in appointments are welcome. The Trib also reported that U.S. News & World Report was out with its annual rankings of colleges and universities. Those rankings are determined by a complicated system of factors, including graduation and retention rates, peer assessment surveys, class size, and faculty pay. The University of Iowa ranked 33rd among public universities in the nation. Iowa State University ranked 58th among all public universities. And the University of Northern Iowa ranked 19th among regional universities in the Midwest. And the Trib had word that the Youth Services Director at the Ames Public Library was retiring. Jerry Hyde has worked at the library more than 16 years. Those who worked with her say she's leaving a legacy of revolutionizing youth services at the library. Wednesday's Trib reported that Iowa State University had suspended crew club activities 6 months after two students died in a fatal boating accident. ISU conducted two investigations into the accident at Little Wall Lake, which is about 20 miles north of the university's campus. Those investigations found that ISU did not have adequate oversight over its sport clubs, and that crew club members failed to follow safety procedures that were in the club's own governing document. 19-year-old Derek Nani and 20-year-old Yaakov Ben David died when their boat capsized during practice at Little Wall Lake. Three other crew club members were rescued and survived. The crew club will be suspended for at least the rest of this academic school year while health and safety measures are adopted. There was also word that a public hearing had been held in Ames about how a proposed pipeline might impact Story County. That pipeline would reduce carbon emissions and would stretch through 30 Iowa counties, including Story and Boone. Summit Carbon Solutions is proposing to build it. It's designed to permanently sequester carbon from biofuels plants. The pipeline would extend through 5 states: Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Iowa. It would prevent emissions from being released into the atmosphere, which contributes to global warming. Those emissions would be compressed into a liquid and be transported to North Dakota, where they would be injected into underground rock formations. Those who attended the Monday night meeting wanted information on how land disputes and damages would be addressed. Summit Carbon Solutions would be required to cover damages caused during construction, including the potential loss of crop yields. And the Trib reported that Iowa students with disabilities have been most impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. Most schools plan to prioritize literacy, math, and mental health when they spend federal aid money to address learning loss. Yesterday's Trib reported online that students in the Ames School District would be required to wear masks again starting today. That was the school board's unanimous decision on Wednesday, and it followed a federal judge's order on Monday that blocked the state of Iowa from keeping school districts from issuing the mandates. That decision opened the door for districts to again require the face coverings. The new mandate in Ames is expected to stay in effect as long as it's consistent with guidance from the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and consistent with federal and state law. The Trib's print edition had word that the Ames City Council had unanimously approved $21 million in bonds to fund the city's proposed downtown aquatic center. Construction will start in 2023. That means the city will go 2 years without a municipal pool once the one at Ames High is torn down. The total estimated cost of the new pool is $31 million. Residential property taxes could go up anywhere from $13 to $21 per $100,000 of assessed valuation. There was also a report that the state of Iowa had lost more than 7 million trees in cities and farms last year when the derecho windstorm swept across much of the state. Cedar Rapids, Des Moines, and Davenport suffered the biggest tree losses, according to the new report from the State Department of Natural Resources. Iowa cities lost about 4.5 million trees, while rural lands lost nearly 3 million. Ames and Story County were said to have lost 250,000 trees. And the Trib reported that Iowa State University plans to continue an optional online winter class session that was created because of the coronavirus pandemic. Last year's winter session was the first time the university had offered such a program. This year's online session will start December 20th and end January 14th. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, heading out for the weekend now, but very much planning to return to the same virtual seat on Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news around the state. And there's been a whole lot of that. Until then, I hope you have a great weekend.
There's a place I can get to where I'm safe from the city blues, and it's green and it's quiet. Only trouble was I had to buy it, and I'll do anything I got to do. Cut my hair and shine my shoes and keep on singing the blues if I can stay here in Johnny's garden. As the swift bird flies over the grasses, dipping now and then to take his breakfast, thus I come and go and I travel. But I can watch that bird and unravel, and I'll do anything I got to do. Cut my hair and shine my shoes and keep on singing the blues if I can stay here in Johnny's garden.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News and the music interlude, Johnny's Garden, by Stephen Stills when he was with his band Manassas. Last Saturday, we were able to gather at the King Conservation Area in quite a garden spot of Dallas County, just southwest of Ames. Chris Adkins, naturalist with the Dallas County Conservation Board, welcomed everyone to their Prairie Awakening Awoke ceremonies and included a monarch butterfly program.
I was trained as a scientist, and so this is a strange question from a scientist, but do you believe in miracles? So how many of you out there in the audience would say, yeah, I believe in miracles? Any hands up? I'll put it to you this way. As a scientist, probably the most renowned scientist is Albert Einstein, and Albert is quoted as saying, there are two ways to live your life. One is as if there are no miracles. The other is if everything's a miracle. And as a scientist, when I ran into monarchs, I said, man, if it's good enough for Albert, it's good enough for me. That is a miracle in my hand. And so these monarchs that weigh a fifth of an ounce on those gossamer wings of theirs realize they have 1,500 miles to go to a sanctuary in Mexico, and that is the only place on this planet they can spend the winter and survive. Now, for you elders in the audience, I want you to entertain this notion. Normally, an adult monarch, the flying bug, its lifespan is about 2 weeks. They will not be getting to Mexico until when? Anybody here know? When do monarchs reach Mexico? Day of the what? Day of the dead. And what day is that? Yeah, 1st of November. So these guys are leaving here, and they're headed for Mexico, and they're not going to make it till the 1st of November. Do the math. How many weeks is that? They have a lifespan of 2 weeks. Can they get to Mexico? They don't get to Mexico for 6 weeks. So what they are capable of doing is somehow turning off their aging mechanism, and they are going to live the equivalence of a human being living 500 years. How do they do that? Now, when I was 10 or 12 years old, I didn't really think about mortality. I'm turning 65 this year, and I realized the numbers are not good here any longer. I'm not going to be eternal. I would really like to be able to find out from this bug exactly how in the world do you find Ponce de Leon's fountain of youth and live that long. So realize they will make it to Mexico, they will stay there through the winter, and then in March they will mate, the males will all die in Mexico, and the females will head north, never to make it back here. The females impregnated in Mexico will lay eggs somewhere in northern Texas, and then they'll die. So their first generation will get to there. It'll go through the usual caterpillar and chrysalis stage, and then it will start flying north. They won't make it back to Iowa. They make it about to Missouri. So it will be the grandchildren of these monarchs that we have in our hands today that will be returning, usually somewhere around the second week of May. And when they return, to me, that is a miracle. Now, how long has that story been part of the prairie? As long as these native stories have been part of the prairie. Here's the reason we need healing. This story could end. Monarch populations have had a tenfold decline over the last 20 years. There's something that is challenging their future, and if we're honest about it, it is us. So if we awaken a prairie and the people in it, can we recognize this bug as a relation, someone that their well-being is as important as ours, and create a world that has room for them? I am not here to tell you a story of extinction. I'm here to tell you a story of awakening. To learn from Martin Luther King, he did not change human behavior by delivering a speech that says, "I have a problem." Humans don't work well that way. Instead, Martin Luther King Jr. said, "I have a dream." And it's nice to be in this circle today with all you dreamers. So what we've got here now is we've got some volunteers and staff, and anybody that would like to hold in your hand a miracle, come to those bins, grab one of these monarchs, hang on to it. They will demonstrate to you how to hold it. When you have it in your hand, look at that bug. Be amazed by its beauty. So start passing them out. We've got monarch holders. Those of you who have a bug in your hand, let's have an argument here. Is it a bug or is it a miracle? What do you think? It is hard to not look at that relative and not believe it's a miracle. And so, do they make it to Mexico? Monarchs that we have tagged right here at Keene have been recovered by other miracle seekers all the way down into Mexico. And this research project, we're not just putting stickers on them for fun. It's to help us try and understand how many of them are there. How many males and females? How far do they travel each day? How long does it take them? What routes do they take? So this is real similar to bird banding, where we can put a tracking device on a specimen and follow it. The difference that we have compared to what goes on with the University of Kansas is, I side with Albert. These are miracles. So if you look at the instructions from Monarch Watch on how to tag monarchs, they just tell you, after you have affixed the tag to the specimen, release the specimen into the wild. To heck with that. This is not a specimen. This is a miracle. So when we get all these miracles distributed to you, I'm going to ask you to do what we do with our science, and that is look your miracle right in the eye, give it a kiss right there on its proboscis, that coiled up tongue of theirs, and then on the count of three, we will say 1, 2, 3, adios, amigos. We're wishing our friends well in the language of their wintering grounds. And then we'll say, be free, and we'll let them loose, and they will carry your prayers. So if you're holding one now, this is akin to the jingle dress. This is akin to the drum, the songs, to Dallas's dance. These are reasons for hope and mechanisms of healing. So, Vic, you got everybody passed out?
Nope.
So, anybody, young and old, we've got a bunch of youngsters, and we've got even some gray-haired old elders over there with monarchs in their hands. Take a lesson from that Black Elk's words. Much can be learned by children at play. Be a child yourself. Put a miracle in your hand. Vic's still dishing them out. It's good to see some of you elders smile and walk out. So why don't you, all you that have your bugs, look them in the face, look your miracle in the face, and in a moment, you're going to plant a kiss right on their lips, wish them well, and I would ask you to maybe say a prayer, not only for this relation, but for all of us here in the circle, and for healing. So we got them, Cindy's dishing them out. Now, here's a shameless piece of advertisement. Pay attention to our newsletter because we will be doing public monarch tagging probably starting this week and into the following week. And you can come join us for an afternoon or part of a weekend day and we'll wander about in the prairies and let you capture your own and learn more about this miracle. So good. We've got all of those miracles distributed. All of you scientists, look your miracle right in the face. Wish it well. Say a prayer in your own tradition for healing. And now I'd ask you to give that friend a kiss.
No!
Come on, man. Show us how. Give him a kiss. Watch. Here, this guy. Oh, he's brave. Right there. Good job, brother. And then say, adios, amigos.
Or amiga.
Amiga. And then 1, 2, 3, be free. Let them go. Ah. And if you're in this arena and you do not at that moment have a piece of hope well up amongst you in your heart, I think you may not have a heartbeat. We can't help you. Come on, sister. Get up, girl. Get up there. She's going to make it to the prairie. Out she goes. All you scientists, thank you. And let's side with Albert. It is not, there are no miracles. It's that everything is a miracle, including our gathering here today. So I'll give this back to Tone, and he will invite you to the next practice of healing. We're going to be bringing to you our friend Dallas Chief Eagle. Thank you.
You've been listening to Chris Adkins. He's the naturalist at the Dallas County Conservation Area. Anytime you get quotes like, look your miracle in the face, be free.
Sage advice.
Well, Mike Metz, he also he had some commentary about the picture sage that these monarchs were so attracted to. It's a blue flower, and I did not recognize it. And I know some prairie plants, quite a few actually, but this one was a new one to me. And apparently it was in a seed mix that the previous prairie manager had included 25 years ago. And now this picture sage is dotting different spots, especially in the lowlands. It likes moist areas. But they had some up around the lodge there at the Keene Conservation Area. And there were like 23 monarchs on this one little picture sage.
Yeah, no doubt it was something that the butterflies west of the Missouri area probably latched onto there, and they've adapted this side of the Missouri.
They're proud of their native prairie, and I guess that was the rub 25 years ago was, oh, well, it's kind of technically a little stretched, maybe the Lost Hills, but more Nebraska, yeah. South Dakota. But, man, is it a monarch attracting magnet. Yeah, that was really special. They also have injured wildlife that are released. They released a red-tailed hawk at their recent prairie awakening, They have native drum and hoop dancing and a whole lot more. Keep that on your radar for next year. It's pretty special.
Sounds like they do a spring equinox as well, don't they?
Yeah, but this is their main prairie focus. It'll be start early in September next year. So let's have a music break, and we'll be back with more local talk. This is KHOY, Community Radio's Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum today with our great engineer Mike Murphy and co-host Mike Metz. Let's welcome Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer with the City of Ames. Hi, Susan.
Hi, good to be here.
Oh, it's great to see you again on this Friday before another big weekend. Before we introduce your guests, do you have any announcements for the city?
Well, I always have announcements. It's great to work in an organization where there is always things going on. And yeah. I just want to remind listeners that our Public Art Commission, which is one of the numerous boards and commissions appointed by the mayor that serve the City of Ames, our Public Art Commission is celebrating its 30th anniversary. So it has been in existence for 30 years. And on Wednesday, September 22nd at City Hall, there will be a brief celebration and reception and then a tour of the public art of City Hall.
Oh, fantastic.
The public art, yeah, Yeah, it's really a great thing. The Public Art Commission will have former members, former chairs that will come and give a little bit of a talk and some history of the Public Art Commission and some of their great successes over the years. We're really fortunate to live in a city that invests in public art, yeah, both inside and sculpture outside. You can thank the Public Art Commission for the revolving sculptures that we see on Main Street downtown in Ames. Yeah. That's a project of theirs.
I love the variety, the way it just, like, mm-hmm, evolves, like you said. What time, yeah, is that? What time is that again, Susan?
It starts at 4 p.m. It goes from 4 to 6 at City Hall, September 22nd.
I'll put that on the website for sure. And kudos to that commission. I couldn't agree more. We're very fortunate.
Yeah. Yeah. So that should be fun and exciting. Of course, there's the other things we've talked about. The dog park will close on Wednesday, the 22nd, for a couple of days for maintenance. Trick-or-treating in Ames has been set. It is Sunday, October 31st. A lot of people will mark their calendars in advance.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we have those fall no-charge yard waste days coming up, and you can get those dates on our website, cityofames.org.
Basically, the latter part of October and I think the first weekend of November, if I recall. Yeah. Like you say, get them on the calendar. Things coming up.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. So you brought our fire chief with you today, Rich Higgins.
Yes, I did wanted to bring our fire chief, Rich Higgins, onto the show today to really kind of go back in our history and why we started meeting more regularly here at KHOI was really to do some community COVID updates and sort of talk about the pandemic and its impact on the community. And while the pandemic itself may have taken a backseat recently, we cannot forget that it is still a threat and still a concern in our community. And Chief Higgins continues to meet with the other healthcare organizations and major community organizations on a regular basis to continue to monitor COVID numbers, to determine how other organizations are handling different situations, to share resources. Those meetings continue to happen behind the scenes, and I just wanted to make sure that, yeah, your listeners were aware of what was going on.
We need to promote awareness. Thank you for coming on the program, Mr. Higgins.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. I wish I wasn't talking COVID. I wish I was talking fire safety, but maybe next month we can get together in October when we have fire prevention, fire safety going on.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a natural link. But, yeah, I think it's a really good topic to keep our eye on the ball, so to speak, on these COVID variants. So
It really is. And that's what we're doing, is we're keeping an eye on everything and bringing our community partners back together. We were, you know, over the summer months, we were able to pull back to meeting once a month because our numbers were really low. We were doing really good.
Mm-hmm.
People were getting out and about, enjoying life, and COVID was able to stay low. But as we've come to school year and getting people back into the classrooms and on the university campuses, mm-hmm, our COVID numbers are starting to sneak up just a little bit. And so that's what we're doing, is we're making sure we got our finger on the pulse of what's happening in our community and statewide so we can get that information out to the citizens and help them to make informed choices.
Informed choices. I like that term. And I guess I'm curious, what do you tell people about wearing a mask?
Yeah, that's a good one. So I was tuned in. I have kids that are in the Gilbert School District, so I was watching the Gilbert School Board go through that process and make decisions on what they're going to do for masking, just as many school districts. We're seeing that across the state. And I always encourage people to do what's right for them. I would encourage people to wear a mask. I send my son, who's 9 years old, he is unable to get vaccinated. We send him to school with a mask every day. And so that's our choice. That's what we do. And so I know a lot of businesses, as a family, I can speak more of as a family person. When we go into a business and they ask you to wear a mask, we are happy to do so because we want to be respectful of the people that work there, that's their job. Some people say, well, it's their choice. But sometimes when it comes to working, they need that job to put food on the table. So we want to be respectful of them and not have an opportunity to get any of them sick and impact their families. So really, we encourage everybody to wear a mask. Our crews, when they go out on medical calls, they're wearing masks because they want to keep the customer, the patient, healthy and safe as much as possible. Even though we're there for an emergency, we don't want to spread anything to them. nor do we want our firefighters bringing anything home back into the fire station or back to their families, because that does have an impact on our emergency response.
Oh.
And that's something we've really kept a close eye on, is keeping all of our first responders healthy so they can continue to help the public stay healthy.
Yeah, that brings up a good point about the communal aspect of your firekeeper staff that are living together while they're on duty, and how devastating it would be if the variant made inroads.
Absolutely. We could quickly lose a crew, and then that's not good for anybody.
Exactly. Well, you mentioned talking to the Gilbert School Board. Was that just recently? Is that a result of this judge sending or making it so that a mandate is appropriate?
Yes. So just like many school boards, I think Ames did it earlier this week. Gilbert just happened to be last night. And so the school board met, and they've decided not to require masks at this point in time. However, they left the door open that if they get further information, that they can always come back and revisit that. So I really feel and appreciate all the school board members. I know they're in tough spots, mm-hmm. and I am grateful for what they're doing. There is no right or wrong choice sometimes. I always hope people rely on the subject matter experts, go to the doctors and what they're recommending. And so we've elected these officials to be in these positions. They're tough spots. So kudos to them for standing up and doing what they think is right as a board. I know it's a tough decision, but we're grateful for what they're doing too.
And the numbers seem to be climbing back to where they were pre-vaccination era, or maybe the numbers from last January.
They are starting to sneak up a little bit. The state of Iowa's at a 9.1% for positivity. And in Story County, we started the week at 6.1. We're creeping up. We're at 6.4% positivity. And most of that is, and what I'm sharing, I want everybody to be informed. So if you go to www.coronavirus.iowa.gov, you'll be able to look at all the data that I'm looking at every day. It's free for everybody out there. Hop on there, stay informed so you can make good choices. But for Story County, our age group that's the most impacted by COVID right now with the most positive tests is that 18 to 29-year-old group, Story County. That's our snapshot, which that shouldn't come as a surprise to most people. We're our university town.
Mm-hmm.
We would expect that. Now, when you look at the state of Iowa, however, the largest group that's testing positive is that 0 to 17-year-old group. Which, once again, that shouldn't be a big surprise as children are back in the classrooms, that we could see a little bit of a peak for that age group. Some of the good news is that we're seeing is that, you know, hospitals are busy. I won't speak for all the hospitals, but from what I'm hearing from our community partners, they are busy. They are doing their best to keep up and keep serving the public. On top of COVID, they still have sick people that are in the community. That just doesn't go away. So COVID patients add to those numbers that they're already dealing with on a daily basis. So just know how thankful we are for our healthcare workers and what they're going through every day. But just jumping back a little bit, the hospitals are busy, but right now I think we're able to keep an eye on everything. We're continuing to communicate. We're encouraging people to get vaccinated, and we're keeping an eye on the numbers. Things are starting to creep up a little bit. We're doing better than some of our surrounding counties. You know, Polk County's at 10%, Boone's at 9%, Hamilton's at 12%. So the fact that Story County, with a large population of college students, is doing so well, I think that's kudos to our community stepping up and saying, hey, we're going to do what's right for our community and protect ourselves, whether it's through vaccinations, wearing a mask, or most importantly, they're really pushing this school and we should be pushing it in our workplaces. And that's, if you're sick, stay home. I know there's so many dedicated workers out there that say, hey, you know, I got to go in, I got to do my job. I don't feel the best today, but I got to get in there and serve the public or whatever it may be. But when you're sick, you got to stay home. So we're trying to work really hard on changing that mindset of, when you're sick, just stay home. We don't need you coming in here to work to get other people sick or at school.
Could you help me on this 6.1% of Story County, is there a difference, or are they separating the variants from the original, or are the most of the current numbers being driven by the variant of COVID-19?
So they are not breaking it down by the variant. So I know the state is testing for that. So they do sample to find out what variants are out there just so they have awareness.
Right.
But the positivity that we're seeing, so this right now it's up to 6.4. That could be a number of variants that are out there that we're dealing with. We don't know. But here's what we do know is that the vaccines work. Okay. The hospitals are seeing that around, I think the state is saying around 88% of hospitalizations are people that are unvaccinated. So that's one of our best weapons that we have to fight COVID, is that you still may get COVID, but if you're vaccinated, we're seeing very minor symptoms, more like cold symptoms, maybe a stuffy nose, a little bit of a sore throat for a few days. But we're not seeing the hospitalizations, the ICU admittances for those who are vaccinated. Those are very rare and far and few in between. So those breakthrough cases where somebody's vaccinated but still gets COVID, it's still making people a little bit sick, but not to the point that it did if you were unvaccinated.
I see. So the vaccination kind of diminishes the effect it has on people that do get tested as positive for COVID-19.
Yeah, and I always want to caution our listeners is that I'm a fire chief, and I'm covering emergency response for the city of Ames. When it comes to medical issues, you need to talk to your doctor. Don't go on the internet. Don't necessarily listen to me. Go to the people that work in the medical field that do this every day. Talk to them. Ask them, your doctor, what's best for me? Don't try to be the subject matter expert by watching a Facebook or a YouTube video or a TikTok video. Go to your doctor. They've invested years and years and years of educating themselves and wanting to keep the public healthy as possible. So use your doctors, please, people. Go to your doctors. Trust what they say. They are the experts in this area. Let's rely on them and not something that we find on Facebook or YouTube.
That sounds like a really good point to kind of wrap this up. Is there anything else, Susan or Mr. Higgins?
Well, I would say that I trust Rich, and I listen to him because he does talk to the healthcare experts. But in all seriousness, yes, the best source of all medical information is always your personal health care provider. And so we obviously encourage people to go to those sources directly and then, you know, make educated decisions, and we'll get through this. I mean, that's been one of the silver linings of this whole issue, is seeing how Ames has come together in a time of crisis to deal with a really serious issue that is affecting all of us.
Well, thank you for that sage advice, Rich Higgins, our fire chief and COVID coordinator for the City of Ames. And thank you, Susan Guiasta, public relations officer for the City of Ames. Hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, Pat. You too.
Okay.
New York City years ago, curious in the rain, singing on the swing ship for Penny, thinking about the buyer, Cajun River song, almost got my head broke. Texas, purple peacock honky tonk in Eunice, Louisiana, bourbon whiskey free song just tune up the piano, working clubs in New Orleans bringing down a dollar, college boys drink beer and throw the bottle.
It's been a long, long, long way, I've got some more to go, don't forget my shadow.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. the first cicada of summer or the last flock of barn swallows in autumn, are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. And as Lee Searles of White Rock Conservancy writes, phenology is the study of natural cycles in the lives of living animals and plants. And today's phenology is about pelicans. The early autumn azure sky was speckled with glinting morning's light that was spiraling and flowing with glistening points of light. When the spectacle seemingly disappeared, lo and behold, large white wings with black margins were soaring in unison, hundreds of twinkling strobe lights that were disappearing, then reappearing again as the sunlight played upon the visage. American white pelicans are gracing our skies this time of year. Pelicans are a huge water bird with very broad wings, a long neck, and a massive bill that gives the head a unique, elongated shape. Their length is between 4 and 5 feet, and they weigh up to 30 pounds in weight and on average are longer, from beak to tail, than even trumpeter swans. Yet their 9-foot wingspan is only outdone by one other species nationally, California condor. Adult American white pelicans are snowy white with black flight feathers, visible only when the wings are spread. A small patch of ornamental feathers on the chest can become yellow in spring. The bill and legs are yellow-orange. Immatures are mostly white as well, but the head, neck, and back are variably dusky or gray. If you've just started noticing pelicans or haven't seen them yet, don't worry. Their populations are still growing. Like hawks, eagles, and ospreys, pelican populations were decimated in the 1950s by chemicals like DDT accumulating in the environment, which then accumulated in the fish the pelicans ate and poisoning the pelicans. Now that those chemicals have been phased out in America, pelican populations are starting to recover and use more of their historic range, and that includes Iowa. You heard that right? There are pelicans in Iowa. Hundreds of them spend their summers on Iowa wetlands as non-breeders called bachelor pods. There are 100 or so nesting on islands within the Mississippi River, and while most people associate the fish-eating behemoth family and their unique beaks with coastal areas, American white pelicans are actually inland birds with main breeding grounds near the Great Lakes, the Dakotas, and southern Canada. Keep an eye out for them flying through autumn. They're pretty hard to miss. Pelicans fish together and prefer to do so in large groups of a dozen or more birds. The pelicans flap their wings and dip their beaks in a semicircle around a school of fish, directing the fish towards shallow water. Once there, the fish can't dive down to get away, and the pelicans, all in a line, can simply scoop them all up in unison. When one dips their beak, they all dip and come up with a pouch full of fish. This behavior differs significantly from that of coastal-dwelling cousins, the brown pelicans, which drop from the sky and dive entirely underwater after their fish. And contrary to popular belief from Finding Nemo, pelicans do not carry water or fish in their beak pouches while flying. Those pouches can hold up to 5 gallons of water, which at more than 40 is a struggle for the bird to lift, let alone fly with. However, that capacity helps the pelican catch lots of fish in one bite. Once their pouch and mouth is full, pelicans tip their heads back to let most of the water spill out the sides of their beak as the muscles of their pouch contracts. Then, they swallow their catch head first. Pelicans are also common food thieves and will swipe a meal from a gull, egret, great blue heron, or even another pelican. And their stealing is successful about a third of the time. American white pelicans typically breed on islands and shallow wetlands in the interior of the continent. The islands or its shores are usually barren of trees or shrubs to inhibit predation from foxes, coyotes, or raccoons. Pelicans of both sexes develop a bump in breeding season called a nuptial knob. The lump forms on top of the bird's beak and falls off after the birds have mated and laid eggs. Its function is not entirely known, but is thought to be a display of fertility. Pelican breeding coloration is also fairly spectacular. the feet and bill turn vivid orange. Although pelicans may lay as many as 6 eggs in a nest, usually only 1 chick survives. This may be partially due to the sheer amount of care each chick requires. Between the male and female, who both incubate the eggs and co-parent after they hatch, pelican parents must provide approximately 150 pounds of fish to rear a single chick to flight stage later in summer. While adult pelicans are too large for most Iowa predators to tackle, they do make the occasional meal for coyotes, and pelican eggs and chicks are much more appealing to predators like eagles, owls, gulls, crows, and foxes, and even other pelicans. For smaller predators like other birds, pelicans' parents fend off attacks by retaliating with sharp beak jabs, but if a large mammal approaches the nest, the parents often abandon it to ensure their own survival. Pelicans spend winters mainly on coastal waters, bays, and estuaries. Our pelicans overwinter on the Gulf of Mexico. Before migration, pelicans congregate to replenish fat reserves for their big flight. One of these places is Sailorville Reservoir, southwest of Ames. Chester Park in Polk County, along the shores of Sailorville Reservoir, can provide a tremendous landscape to enjoy pelicans. Campground number 4 provides great viewing opportunities when water levels are low, as they are typically in each autumn, and pelicans return to the lake each afternoon and will soar over an embankment, one after another, so close you can hear the wind whooshing through their wings. Large numbers can be seen working the shallow areas of the reservoir for fish. Their favorite fish is gizzard shad. It's native, yet considered a bait fish, with wildly fluctuating populations from year to year or lake to lake. Wherever gizzard shad numbers are high seems to be where large numbers of pelicans congregate this time of year. It seems anything pelicans do, they do in synchrony with each other. From flying in a line one after the next, or lining up to fish, or soaring effortlessly in large flocks, they do everything with unity. Pelicans provide wonderful wildlife outdoor viewing opportunities this time of year. And that's our phonology for today about American white pelicans. Theme music is from John Barleycorn, Must Die by Traffic. This is Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio 89.1 FM, Story City, Ames. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
Without a little barley
coal. Let's welcome Amber Wingert with the ISU Extension for Story County. Amber is the marketing and office coordinator. Amber Wingert, welcome to Local Talk.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. I love having your appearances here representing all the fine work that the ISU Extension does for Story County. What's happening in September?
Well, we are just wrapping up our summer programming now. And here in September, October, we're starting into fall programming. And we have some great opportunities for youth in the fall programming this year. Especially here in Ames, we are partnering with the Ames Public Library on a no school day coming up here on October 4th. We're going to hold a babysitting clinic October 4th from 9:15 to 3:15 at the Ames Public Library. We're inviting grades 5 and up to come learn about how to get started in babysitting as a business. You know, they can learn about the different stages of youth, some healthy food choices. They do learn some basic first aid and what to do in case of an emergency there.
Okay. Good topics, yeah. All in all.
Yeah, and then some other things happening in Ames. This Saturday at the Ames Main Street Farmers Market, Stephanie, our nutrition program coordinator, is going to be there at our booth providing some nutrition information and just bring your questions, come see us. We love coming to the market and just seeing all the community members.
Is there a standard place where you're located?
We kind of get moved around since we just come once a month. But we'll be under the bright red tent. This is Iowa State Extension, so you can't miss us.
Okay.
Other fall things happening. A big one we always like to hit on this time of year is our 4-H is now open enrollment. So now through February 1st, we invite youth K through 12 to enroll in 4-H. It's a great program there. We have clubs and just about every community in the county. So reach out to us and we can help you find a club or get your re-enrollment put in. It's a great opportunity. You know, people think of 4-H as the fair, but we have over half of our club members that don't participate in the fair. They just enjoy doing the activities, learning about leadership, and just making new connections there in the club. So that's always exciting this time of year as well, seeing the re-enrollments and the getting the kids enrolled in 4-H.
My sister was a 4-H member, and she's in her elder status now. We'll refer to the how she got her start with public speaking and different topics that 4-H provided her and all that positive reinforcement that these activities give to a family.
Most definitely. The kids learn lots of valuable life skills, definitely, just going to the monthly meetings.
You mentioned the fairs. There was recently, I read an article where a 4-H member had a moth in a entomology collection of his insect collection, and it turned out to be very, very significant discovery of of that bug in Kansas. But it was all a result of, I think, an 11-year-old, you know, had an impact on science just from his 4-H involvement. Well, we've got a couple more minutes. Is there?
Sure. Yes, I do. We do have a program that for custodial grand families and foster parent families. The program's called Interact. And what it is, it's a 6-week program. It's starting October 11th and runs through November 15th. How it works is the adults and grandparents have a meeting time on Thursdays, and they talk about support, resources, and just how to create a lasting relationship with that grandchild or foster child. And then the children also get to participate. They get to meet on Monday nights and get to talk through the relationships and skills as well. So that's a great program that will be starting in October. And that I will give you a little bit of information about registration for that, because that's a little bit different than contacting our office. You need to contact an email. It's CYFAR, CYFAR, at iastate.edu. They can help you get registered. And of course, you're always welcome to call our office at 515-337-1601, and we can provide you more information and help with that as well.
And some of these dates we'll reiterate in future local talks, particularly this last one, October 11th. We'll have updates for that included.
Yeah.
Amber, I think we're about to run out of time, so it's...
No problem.
Wonderful to have you with us. Amber Wingert with ISU Extension for Story County. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at 89.1. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And hit that play button. Remember to please support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community nonprofit, nonpartisan media.
Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rudenberg and Lynn Carey, and thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy, and thanks to our guest Chris Atkins, naturalist, Dallas County Conservation Board, Susan Guiasta and Rich Higgins with the City of Ames, and Amber Wingert with the ISU Extension for Story County. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. I've been your host for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard from were Stephen Stills, and he played with the band Manassas, Don't Look at My Shadow, Johnny's Garden, and Jesus Gave Love Away for Free. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.